I'm Karen Merks, and this is Michael Jackson's Dream Lives On, an academic conversation, the official podcast of Michael Jackson Academic Studies. You can subscribe to the podcast via iTunes, Stitcher, Android, Spotify, and Amazon Music. You can also listen to the podcast and previous published podcasts on the website www.michaeljacksonstudies.org. This is episode 89 of Michael Jackson's Dream Lives On, an academic conversation. And your hosts are academic Elizabeth Amizou and academic Karen Merks. And today we are discussing academic book reviews and how to write them. The main premise is, what exactly is needed to write an academic book review without falling into a personal opinionated trap? I can give a very short answer on this before we move on, but by understanding that an academic book review is a disciplinary evaluation and not a reader response, that is what an academic book review needs to be. So then the first question is, what stance does an academic reviewer need to take and why? Your ideas, your thoughts.
Well, you know, some of my favorite book reviews have been Noemi Ndiaye's book review of Miranda Kovman's Black Tudors. I thought that was a fantastic book review. And then also some of the book reviews I've seen of Race and Rhetoric, a book that I really enjoy, by Ian Smith. And I think that what it comes down to is that it has to be really targeted. It has to be really targeted, really focused, really concise. I don't think that falling into a personal opinionated trap is a problem in academia, because everybody needs to take up a position. I think taking up a position is really, really important anyway, in terms of your, this concept that we're all neutral is ridiculous. I don't think that we are. I think we all have opinions and we're going to express those opinions. And we all have, some people have more informed opinions than others, but we all have opinions, and those opinions are going to come out in our writing of academic reviews and research. That's just the nature of the beast. Now, when it comes to specific book reviews, today we're going to be talking about the book review Karen wrote for Willa Stillwater's book. So we're going to be talking about Michael Jackson's
Radical Aesthetic, yeah.
Yeah, volumes one and volume two, which was an undertaking, which was a really big undertaking, and it was a new style of review for the journal, because usually our reviews were quite short, and this one was a little bit extended. So I think this is our opportunity to really talk about that book as well, because we've read it, and there's not been that much discussion online about it so far that I've read, but some people are reading it as well at the moment, I think, and it's just come out. It's really recently come out. But I think that the academic review is a really powerful tool to help readers. I think it's really fundamentally to help readers decide if this book is going to be helpful or useful to me in my research.
Yeah. So an academic reviewer takes a professional evaluative stance and not a personal one. So the stance is defined by you assess the methodological assessment, theoretical positioning, the analytical rigor, the use of quality, use and quality, I would say, of sources and placements within the existing field. That is important when you do a book review, an academic book review. So what the reviewer does not ask is, do I like the book? Do I agree with the author? Does it align with my values or interests? So the main questions An academic reviewer asked, is, does this book meet the standards of the discipline it claims to operate in? And what kind of work is it doing? And does it succeed on its own terms? And this is important as you if you have to write an academic review, because scholarship depends on shared criteria. And without that, reviews become expressions of taste, ideology, or mood. And the discipline loses its evaluative function. And that is really, really important. So, what we see is that it has become more opinion-driven. And that has to do with the conditions. So you have reviews that are increasingly placed on blogs, platforms like Goodreads. And what you see there is that the genre bleeds into each other. So you see the distinction between the reader response and the scholarly evaluation that becomes blurred. You have also, and that is really important in academia nowadays, and I hear that a lot around me also. There are fewer reviews because of tighter deadlines. So there's lesser space. And that compresses analysis and encourages summary plus reaction rather than sustained evaluation. Then we see ideological alignment over disciplinary criteria. In some areas, agreement with an author's political or ethical position is implicitly treated as scholarly merit. So disagreement is misread as bias, and this shifts the review from evaluative to declarative. There is an erosion of methodological training, and we know this because there are especially in humanities, you see a shift towards more not the rigorous training that you and I get and have received, but more to interpretation. And what you also see is that scholars are taught to position themselves, not how to evaluate methodological soundness. Yeah, and there is a confusion between taking a stance or having an opinion. So a stance is disciplinary. An opinion is personal. You have to shift that if you do an academic research. And otherwise it is rather an expressive review and not analytical. And that is key. That is still necessary, I know for sure. And so that is what I have done. Well, we read this book in tandem. What I've done is I make notes, I have the overview, I see what's done, I see the methodology, the theory, the evidence, analytical coherence, scholarly apparatus, contribution to the field. That is what I've done. So there's no like, I like this book or I don't like this book. If you ask me personally, would I use it in my research? No, because I can't. I can't use it in my research for various reasons. So that is, yeah, that's also how I was trained. Can't help it.
Yeah, I've read a lot of reviews of books that I've thought, and I'm talking about academic reviews in journals and things, that I've thought were just complete rubbish. I've read so many reviews of books that, because obviously when you look up a book in a library on a database, you often see the reviews come up at the top or the reviews come up at the other side. And I have read quite a few, and they've often been like you say, there's like a disciplinary issue there with like personal opinions being mixed with
Methodology and scholarly discipline.
Yes, but that's to do with, I think, the positioning of the reviewer. And it also comes of like many reviewers are kind of asked to write reviews for certain books. They're kind of encouraged to write certain reviews for certain books that are released. And it does take a lot of time considering the amount of, and it doesn't get much sort of like credence or credibility from it, from doing it, but it does take a lot of time. So I think we can talk a little bit about the sections of your review, which I think are really important. So you started off with the bibliographic header, with all the textual information about the book itself, and then it has the opening framing. Could you describe what the opening framing does and how it's important?
Well, the opening framing tells you what the that are first of all that are two volumes, and it tells you the writer, the author, is doing and wants to do. That is what the opening framing is. So there you see that you what she is doing. So she uses a prelude. Telling is structured theatrically, divided into the acts. So you have a prelude that's telling, untelling, retelling, then followed by Act One, Act Two, and Act Three. And they also have a coda, enchanting and disenchanting. And the first volume have codetta. And she also then makes clear what she's doing, why she's doing this, and then that is what what I assess. I don't go into I don't go you don't go deep into what she is writing. This is simply framing. This is what the book is about, in simple words. And then you give the next session, that is an overview of the structure and the method. So, what method did she use? What theoretical framework did she use? Did she use it? Etc. That is what she does. So, how she in this in this book, what she is doing. So, she presents Jackson's short film in chronological order. She uses the concept telling, untelling, retelling as a primary interpretive tools. She uses Harriet Beecher Stowe, and she works from early films, Triumph to Who Is It? And then in the second volume, she continues with the telling, untelling, retelling, but then shifts its focus to Jackson's face and public persona. So, that is what you have established. That is not what I criticize or analyze or anything. This is just to give the reader, the academic. So you need a book and you look it up. This is what you get. Okay, this is what the book is about. You need to be concise, and it's a big book, so
Two
and make
books.
that clear. Yeah, you need to so. A scholar can read, okay, that's this. Okay. Let's see if I can use that. So what I then needed to do is to go into the central claim. So the absence of an explicit methodology. Central claims and conceptual framework. I go through there. So I analyze how this works. Then I go into the structure and the chronology and the teleology of the telling, untelling, retelling. And I give a few quotes. You don't quote the whole book. I mean, you can have many quotes. You need just a few to address something that you think, well, this is problematic, etc. And this is necessary. As I said just before, if I don't do that and just say, well, I like it or I don't like it or I agree with it, I don't agree with this, It doesn't say you anything. It doesn't say if you can use it or not. Is it placed within a scholarly, does it refer to scholarly works? Is it placed situated within? And then you have a very important thing, the main premise, there is no question. What is it based on? You know, all that stuff is important.
Yeah, I think it has central claims. The books have central claims. The claims are that Jackson's art challenged white America, that he was a trickster artist, and that his face was his most significant art.
Yeah, those are claims.
And
but then it's necessary, how do you get to those claims?
The review kind of states that there's a lack of an explicit research question or a defined methodological path. And that the analysis relies almost exclusively on the telling, untelling and retelling framework rather than an analytical method, which is very, very difficult to test.
Well, it's interpretation, and that is what she also writes. That it is interpretation, and that everyone has his own interpretation, but that's not academic. Interpretation is not
academic. Unfortunately,
they see it.
It's been published by an academic publisher, and it's an academic book. You may not agree. We may not agree in everything it says, but we can't say it's not academic because it is. It is an academic book.
Well, the thing is, and that is what I said before, academic rigor is based on first analysis and then interpretation of your analysis and not the other way around. But that is a difference nowadays within humanities. Not every university and not everyone who is going through academics learns the rigorous way of doing research. Have a literature review, for instance, so that you know where is it situated. So that is important.
Talking about where it's situated, I think that this concept of historical grounding was really important. You know, we talk about how the analysis of racism and slavery is very narrowly American focused, which is not a problem. I don't think it's a problem, but it jars with the trans-historical, transnational dimensions of racialization that underpin Michael Jackson's work. And then the sustained pairing of Michael Jackson with Uncle Tom's Cabin by Harriet Beecher Stowe.
Yeah, that is problematic because there is no...
Because it relies on paternalistic humanism.
Yeah, and it is, if you have, there is no critical black academic in here. The comparison is also strange because it's... It doesn't. So one is a black artist who creates art. The artist is black, and the other one talks about our black people. And if you had read Everybody's Protest novel by James Baldwin, he describes it as a catalog of violence. And so, you know. It is not that Stowe was a racist in intent, but it is how it constructs black humanity. Uncle Thomas, a figure of morally pure, Christ-like, redemptive through suffering rather than agency, and that is troubling. That's a troubling parallel.
That is a troubling parallel, but. When we move on, I think the scholarly gap that and the scholarly omissions were probably more jarring to me than the Beecher Stowe stuff. And I think that, you know, I was quite glad that you had to write the review, or you chose to write the review, because I felt as though I was kind of overlapping a bit with the research I'm doing with the research Willett has done for this book. So I felt that I was really relieved that I wouldn't have to kind of like make claims that would kind of put my research in jeopardy. You talk a lot about interpretation versus analysis. Interpretation versus analysis. And I think that that's very, very true. But it can be very much argued. So the thing.
Well, the problem is, or the problem, you and I are trained rigorously. But as I said, there are people who do this, and it's allowed, apparently, who do this by interpretation. Interpretation is enough, and that happens in humanity. And there you have, so there, you will have people who read this, who are rigorously trained. And they say, no, this is not a book I can use. There will be people who are more in the interpretive spheres, and they say, oh yeah, I can use this. So that is, yeah. But that is where academics is going to be honest, in
I don't.
humanities.
I
No,
think.
not in Europe and not in the UK, but definitely in the US. There is a difference.
Well, let's get back to book reviews.
Yeah. So let's go to the second question. What structure is needed to write an academic book review? Because if you have a clear structure, and that is why it is so important, a clear structure protect the reviewer from drifting into opinion. Because it's so easy to go into opinion. So a solid academic review usually includes identification of the work, so what I had is the biographical header, the framing, etc. So identification of the work, what's the book claiming to do, in which discipline or subfield does it position itself, contextualization, how does it sit within existing scholarship, what conversations is it entering or ignoring. The methodology and the framework, so what methods and theories are used, are they stated, coherent, and appropriate? Then you need analysis of the execution, so how well does the author carry out their stated claims and aims? And this is where rigor really matters. And then you have an evaluation. You give the strength, and you give the limitations and the consequences for the field based on disciplinary criteria, not personal reaction. That is really important for academic book review.
We disagree. I'm sorry. I feel like we just disagree on this, and I think that's just the way it's going to have to be. Like, I just do not believe that right the academics are impartial in any way. I think they are very biased. They have to take up a stance. If they have to be positioned, and they have to be opinionated, and they are, and that's and the, and it's just about how informed that opinion is. And I've seen it along the strata of everywhere from early modern studies to Michael Jackson studies. I've seen all of it, the good, the bad, the ugly. And I just think that it is an opinionated piece of writing. It's the body of the thing means that it's inherently based on opinions.
Well, that is another thing that what you talk about now. We just talked about that. That is the blurring of the disciplines, and that is something that is growing. There is an erosion of that. So yeah.
Yeah, and I wanted to talk about the strengths of the work. I really think it's very, very important to mention and to discuss the strengths of the work. I think the work, these books in particular, make a sustained effort to treat Michael Jackson as a serious artist. They say he is a serious artist, throughout the book rather than a pop celebrity. However, in its execution, I think there's some flaws there. However, I really did think it's important for a publication to go through the short films in sequence. Even though it's more interpretive than an analytical, and analytical would have been preferable, I still think the strength of the work is that it does have detailed descriptions of the short films that other people can still reference and use where there was none before.
Yeah, but if you use a chronological chronological way here is deliberately done because of the structure of the book. She needs to prove that Michael Jackson's art after the allegations are stronger and more intense, and becomes his best artwork. He becomes a trickster, and his face is his best work of art. And the allegations are placed in between. And the problem with that is that it is a way of how do you say? It is a way of retrofitting to using the allegations, retrofitting to theory. So,
I just can't get past this concept that it's just not written in a way that you like or that you appreciate. It doesn't take away it from it being
it's
academic.
not about what I like or not like. I say what is the work of what I write, if you read really well, it's not how Michael Jackson created his art. So you can claim that there was a before and an after, but that is not correct if you look at the actual way the artist worked. That is key, not whether I like it or not. If you analyze his short films thematically, you come into two completely different things, but then you can't claim that the before and after are the allegations. It's a very simple thing. He didn't make his work linear. That is not something that he did, and most artists don't do that. You don't create. Earth Song was created in the 80s. They don't care about us. Also, Ghost was written with Stephen King in 93. He wrote with that. It became a film in 97. You can't say that is because of it is also strongly related to thriller. You go way back where he got so. It confuses, and that is the problem. And
I think my main issues were things like Eurocentric biases in the analysis. I was particularly cautious about the ways in which the book reinscribes racial stereotypes and simplifies complex racial and cultural dynamics. And it looks at them from a distinctly white American perspective. Which I suppose is an important perspective, but it's just when you have a white American expect perspective looking at a black American person, it creates a problem. It creates a problematic dynamic there already. And then there's the overuse of anecdotal testimony, lack of engagement with existing black scholarship. And then something that wasn't mentioned in the review, which I think is really important, is that the books do focus a lot on the allegations, which I thought was a no-no. It's just a big
That
no.
is an absolute no-no, but that is also why it is. I deliberately, didn't place put that in, because the allegations placed in the middle at the end of volume one, it is to make a point, the before and the after. And it's just what I say. He didn't work before and after. That is nonsense. And then ghosts is all analyzed or written about from a very wide perspective with the Gothic literary tool. But there's no research into what masks actually mean in African culture. Michael Jackson was an African man. So at least...
African-American.
Well, African-American, but at least you take the effort to dive into what more behind there, behind what he does. He wasn't stupid.
I think there's a need for more critically responsible and empirically supported engagement with the source material. I think it needed to be more grounded in Michael Jackson's artistry rather than another point which the author wanted to make, and the artistry just supports that. I wanted to see the book that was about the short films, not about his face as art.
Exactly. And so, it sounds a bit rude, but Michel Foucault would have said, this is the Procrustes bed. So you create a structure because you have this idea that you want to do, you interpret, and then you create a structure to make that happen.
Make it fit. You just
make
cut.
It fit. And so, and that is a shame.
It fits.
And then also saying or writing that there's not enough done about his short films, that's not true. But it is fragmented. Because there is in film studies, there is everywhere is something. And I have just listed a few that I found. None of them are used. None of them. So it's not really situated within scholarly, the short films in scholarly, in the scholarly existence of other articles.
Grounded within the theory.
No, it isn't.
You would expect it to be for a Routledge publication. You would expect that book to be grounded in the current literature that exists, even if it doesn't agree with it. Even if it's
That doesn't matter. But then also you don't, what you don't do is using a black author, Pinder, claiming something, quote, and then not going in an argument like, my argument would be blah, 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 but I believe that this, and I believe that. Just omitting everything. So it's kind of, you can write that, but I don't believe that. Michael Jackson was different. That is a black woman who writes from her own experience. You can't, that is not academic rigor. That is not really going into how you deal with that.
I think it's really interesting because what we've done is we've started talking about how you go about writing academic book reviews to moving on towards how do you write academic books. And I think that maybe we can name this episode How to Write Academically about Michael Jackson, maybe, because we've gone through the book review into a book, into a critical analysis of a book review, into an actual analysis of the book writing itself. And it's just the things that you need to think about when you write books on Michael Jackson. I think there's no one does it perfectly. No one's perfect. None of us are perfect. We're all human and we're going to make mistakes. That's a given. However, there's some things you can do to kind of hedge your bets, to kind of like couch your response. And those things are not done in and have not been done for these volumes, which is a shame, which is just a real crying shame, actually, because they had an opportunity. There was an opportunity there to write something that was critically sound, and really established in the literature that exists. But there's also a tendency in Michael Jackson studies to do that, to ignore everything that has been written and then just write your own thing. And which I've seen, I think it's to do with the fact that there's so much fragmentation in the field, and people are not necessarily coming from other disciplines where you have to be rigorous.
Well, that's what I say. And yeah, in Europe and in the UK, they're really at the university, they're really rigorous. Definitely. I mean, when I had to write my PhD proposal, Jesus, that was a study in itself. But I needed to be, I had everything in place, everything. And that is, you need to be able to verify everything. I mean, using Dr. Klein for a testimony that Michael said his face was his art, that is not solid evidence. That's not solid evidence. But let's go to what it actually the purpose is of an academic review, because I think that is really important. And for who do we actually write? Because the purpose is simple and often, yeah, misunderstood. An academic book review exists to inform the scholarly community whether a book should be engaged with academically. And yeah, so who are we writing for? Other scholars, for researchers, for students, for librarians, for editors, and for the discipline itself. So we're not writing for general readers or fans or social media consensus or market appeal. A good book review, academic review, answers questions clearly. So it's also not necessary to quote the whole book and go to everything that you see. You have the whole thing. So the question is always, is this book a me and that's if you write for an academic, is it meaningful contribution to the field and on what grounds? And if it cannot answer that, it is not functioning as an academic review. So, yeah, I think that the moment personal opinion replaces disciplinary evaluation, the academic book review stops being academic. And it's not that we don't have feelings. Of course, we have feelings. But when we talk about academic book reviews, it's important to be very clear about what they are and not what they are not. So, academic book review is not a personal response and it's not an opinion piece. It's a professional, disciplinary instrument. And
I really think it depends on the context. I really do. I really do. I think it depends on the context. It depends on the journal. It depends on the reviewer. It depends on the book that you're reviewing. I just think that whatever what it is really highly context dependent. It's really highly contextual. In this instance, it was a very helpful guide to fellow academics or aspiring academics to decide if they want to use these volumes.
yeah, and that is
However,
what
in
it
other
is for.
contexts,
Yeah.
it would look different and read different, it would sound different.
That is what I wrote it for. That is necessary. That is how we have to do that. It's something that really is important. And maybe needs to be important again. I mean, you see a lot, and you see that it is personal opinion. And because you see that and you read that, doesn't mean it's good.
It's not really about it being good, it's just what is.
Yeah, but I think if you want to be rigorous, then you need to really step up your plate. And I know doing a review, it is time consuming. It's incredibly time consuming. And not everyone has the time. People are sitting with deadlines and yeah, I know. That's the case. And so I have done this the way I'm trained to do it. Yeah, I think it's good and it's what this book needed. It's published by Routledge and it's that's an academic publisher. And then it deserves this kind of rigorous review. Simple.
Yeah, so when it comes to writing about Michael Jackson, I always want to tell people, don't be scared, don't be afraid. I know there's a sense of trepidation that comes with writing about Michael Jackson, the fear that you will not be, what you say will not be taken the way you mean. I think it's really, really important to just kind of be courageous and brave and come out with your perspective. Whether or not that perspective is appreciated or respected or acknowledged, that's another thing altogether. But I do think that people who want to write about Michael Jackson should. But if you want to write about Michael Jackson for the journal, you do need to be rigorous because we're moving into a new era for the journal where we're really getting very academic. In when we first started, it was more loosely, the field was not solidified in the way it is now, and it was a bit more of a looser project. Whereas now it's got a definite sense of where it's going, its trajectory, and because of that, we are getting very rigorous. So, to anyone who submitted and didn't get published, I'm so sorry. It's just that the way the journal's going is just very, very rigorous now. And if you want to write for the journal, you do need to read the stuff that we publish and listen to some of the podcasts as well, because that will help. That will help a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm personally I'm really happy. Yeah, we started out more as a gathering of the sources because we couldn't find really sources. So we were looking for sources. It was like, okay, let's become and then we went on to essays and you wrote essays and I wrote an essay and then you started a column and it has evolved. And it's good. That's good that it is evolving. And because I can only once say one thing. Michael Jackson deserves rigorous academic research of his art. That's where we're going. And when you want to write a book review, then I also highly recommend using methodology assessment, theoretical positioning, analytical rigor, use of quality of sources, placement within the existing field. That is the structure. And that is very professional and it keeps you at bay from personal, I like that or I like that not, I don't like it. You write then for other scholars and you write for researchers. And that is the way we are going. That's where we're going. So, yeah. Any other thoughts?
No, I've said my last thoughts.
Good. Then I would say thank you very much for listening. And it's all for love. Thank you all for listening. It's all for love.